Check out my new book, Reach All Readers, at reachallreaders.com. When you pre-order, you'll get special access to my Science of Reading mini course. Learn more at reachallreaders.com. Hello, this is Anna Geiger from The Measured Mom, and in today's episode, I spoke with Sally Bergquist, an experienced teacher who has written a writing program for K-2 called Growing Writers. And I know that understanding more about how to explicitly teach writing in the primary grades is a question many of us have. I get this question in email quite a bit. How can I get my students started as writers and then teach them writing explicitly? And we go through all of that in this episode. I know you're going to really enjoy it. And I also recommend that you check out Sally's website, Growing Writers. In the show notes, I've linked to her website, her programs, as well as the research base that she has followed to create her program. A very special thing about her program is she's developed it over many years as a teacher. She kept refining it and testing it with other classrooms. It's not just a quick thing that she put together. It is well vetted, well tested. So I would encourage you to look at that if you're looking for an explicit writing program for the primary grades. So let's get started. Welcome, Sally.
Hi, great to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. We've talked over the years and finally found a time to really sit down and tease out all the complexities of teaching writing in the primary grades, particularly in kindergarten. Can you talk to us about your teaching experience and what you're doing now?
So I had a lot of different experiences in my 20s and 30s, starting with work in infants and toddler daycare. I worked for Head Start. I did substitute teaching. I worked in a little alternative school. And then I ran my own preschool when my daughter was that age so I could stay home. And then in my late 30s, I thought, I better get a teaching job that pays a little more and has some health insurance and retirement benefits. And my daughter was starting first grade, so I got a teaching job, and I stayed at that school for 24 years, teaching kindergarten, first, and second grade. And in my first couple of years of teaching, I saw things that I was doing that were not effective in writing instruction. I saw where kids were getting frustrated and I was getting frustrated. And I thought, there has to be a better way to do this. You know, a gradual way to teach writing where everyone succeeds. So I started developing writing lessons and working out skills, sequences, basically starting out with how to teach handwriting, what works. And over the years, I had many trial and error experiences as I went up through 11 years in kindergarten and 7 years in first grade and then 6 years in second grade. I kept adding on more skills and working out this sequence of what works, what's the right speed, what to introduce. So now what I'm doing is I'm trying to spread the word about the importance of writing, and I'm also working on a book on how to teach writing in K-2.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is a very needed book. So you'll have to keep me posted on that.
Yeah.
So back to, you know, when we think about teaching writing and learning about teaching writing, that is just very hard. I know most of what we read out there is for kids who are already past writing a sentence or able to write a sentence. And there isn't a lot out there for kindergarten teachers, first grade teachers who are trying to figure out where to get started from the ground up. And there's also not as much research as we'd like to see. There's tons and tons of research for teaching reading to the littles, but when it comes to teaching writing, there's not a lot of research there. Why do you think that is?
This is a really big reason. I think there's no urgency about it since writing isn't tested. And since 2002 and No Child Left Behind, one of the big mandates of No Child Left Behind is that reading and math will be tested every year. It's high stakes. Schools get punished if they're, you know, not on track. I think there was a fair amount of writing going on in classrooms in the 80s and 90s. I don't know what years you were teaching.
Early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. There was a lot more emphasis on writing and time for it. And as soon as No Child Left Behind came in, at least in my school and my state, all of a sudden writing was ignored. And in the educational world in America, we base what's important on what's tested. So if something's not tested, it just goes away. And also, there's no time allotted for it. Your district isn't going to say, you have to spend this much time on writing, because there's no incentive to do that. No one's going to care. You're not going to get marked down because your kids can't write. And I think the research has followed that tendency.
So maybe the research is sort of following the interest, like what people are really interested in learning about, and that may not be.
Yes. And the interests are often based on going back to what's tested, what's mandated.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So why is it so important to get writing instruction right from the beginning? Why do we need to take it seriously, even in kindergarten?
Well, I think we have to start with, why is it important to be a writer to begin with? Why be a writer at all? That we know, obviously, we know the advantage of being able to read, right? I mean, that's really, really clear and obvious. But I think there are hidden advantages to being able to write. And writing and reading, both by third grade, if you're not on track, they're the same thing happens in both of those skills. It's just that writing is just more hidden and in the background, but kids are failing in writing right and left.
Well, you said something that made me think that I hadn't really thought about before. What's interesting is that at the beginning, in early school, writing is kind of a hidden skill if you're not being asked to do it very often, right? So it may be teachers may not know how well students can form a sentence or write a paragraph. But then when you're an adult and you're in the workplace, your boss may never hear you read, but they're definitely going to see the writing that you do. So
right,
now all of a sudden
exactly.
It's very obvious. Mm-hmm. And we also would all probably agree that we tend to judge someone's intelligence by their writing. So if someone would communicate through work and not use complete sentences or use fragments or use poor spelling, that reflects on them for better or for worse. And so that's a really big reason to get it right. And we can't wait until the middle grades to suddenly teach writing. We've got to get started from the beginning.
Yeah. Yep.
So thinking about writing, I think, you know, when I was a classroom teacher, I taught third, fourth, and fifth grade first, and then first and second, and I did use writing workshop in all of them. That was what I had learned, and I think there are some things to be said for writing workshop. I definitely don't want to communicate that it's all bad or anything like that, but at least in the way that I was carrying it out, there wasn't a lot of explicit instruction. There was a lot of, you just need lots of time to do this. Let me just give you the time to figure this out, basically, and a lot of assuming on my part. So assuming that they knew how to write, how to form a sentence, assuming that they knew how to plan a story, or they would just, you know, figure it out as they went along, versus, you know, really thinking about what were the foundational skills they needed to get started. Remember, I have so many regrets, but one would be just getting frustrated that a child just wasn't getting started. Like they just weren't doing it. I was like, why are you? And to me, I looked at it as almost as a defiance issue, which shows how little I knew. But I just didn't know all the breakdown of all the skills that he really had to be able to do to get started. Like I couldn't see inside of his head. You know, I knew that he could form letters. So I assumed, and he could do some basic spelling. So I assumed he had what he needed, but you have created a writing pyramid to clarify all the skills that are involved in writing, as well as to show what you believe should be taught as children progress. Can you talk us through why you developed that and a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, one of the things I learned as I went was how much needed to be broken down. Mm-hmm. I would try and do something with the class, and my barometer was always, how are the most struggling kids doing? I wasn't willing to leave anyone behind. Mm-hmm. And I would come up with this lesson that I thought was just wonderful, and I thought was small enough for everyone to get. And I would introduce it, and then I'd have hands in the air and kids stuck. And it was like, wow, even that wasn't enough. Like, I need to break this down even more. The very, very first level is just simply things like staying seated, knowing how to work quietly. And in kindergarten, you can't get started with writing until the kids have those skills, because otherwise they're up, they're coming to see you, they're talking to their friend, they're even things like, a pencil is a tool. Not a toy.
Not a weapon.
Not a weapon. Don't play fight with it. Simple drawing. I found that kids' fine motor skills really improved when I would teach how to draw really simple things, just shapes mm-hmm. and things, even before starting handwriting. So all the time thinking, how are they going to be ready for the next step? What do they need to master to really be ready? And even in first grade, I didn't give kids their writing workbooks until they could demonstrate that they could sit, work silently for 5 minutes. Because okay. otherwise, I'm wasting time. So the first level is things like pencil grip, drawing, and the handwriting, for sure. Then even breaking handwriting down into round letters, tall letters. Next level would be really getting more fluency now that they know how to write all their letters and they're hopefully going along with reading. They're learning about letter sounds, and so they can use that because writing and reading go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And sentences come later, sentences and punctuation. And I'm hoping that will be helpful to some people, and other people will look at it and see if it makes sense. And here again, it's one more thing that needs researching. It's just, yeah.
So if someone's a kindergarten teacher and they're starting out the year and they want to have their students maybe draw pictures and maybe if they're able to use some letters to label a picture, so like the sun might be SN or something, depending on what level of development they're at. What would you recommend for the teacher? Like, I'm getting the impression you would not say to dive into that right away. So how do you get yourself to that?
For the first maybe month or so before handwriting, just doing really simple shapes, simple drawing, tracing lines, doing a lot of hand, finger, Play-Doh. Some kids haven't done that at home. So getting their fine motor muscles in their fingers going.
Basically, you're saying take some time, do some fine motor muscle type activities, build into handwriting. Tell me how your program works. Like, when do kindergartners start to actually draw their own picture and maybe label it?
Drawing right away, for sure. Okay. Labeling is a difficult skill. I think if I was to ask kids to label, I would be very clear about what that meant. Does that mean just the first letter of a word? Does that mean, you know, how much are you expecting? So I would base success on where I thought that they were. I wouldn't ask for more than I thought they could do. And so I wouldn't do it until I knew that enough of them would be successful at coming up with that, at least that first letter in a word. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, you know, just get the first letter of the word. So they're really clear about what it means. I'm not expecting more than that right away.
So at the beginning of the year, you're focusing on the fine motor, the handwriting, and then as you go into the writing and the drawing, knowing that some students may be at that point where they can label the pictures, but you're not teaching this exactly or expecting it until you feel that more students can be successful.
Right. And the key word is expect. Kids mm-hmm. can be labeling all they want. If they want to label and they know how to label, great. But I wouldn't expect everyone to until a certain point. And then I would say, today I know that all of you have learned, you know, enough letters and sounds, you're ready to go. And today we're going to do something new. And I want you to, you know, write a sound that the letter starts with next to three things in your picture, you know, mm-hmm. being really specific.
So if you had to break down the lessons in your program in terms of time spent with direct teacher instruction and then students actually writing, how does that look?
Most of the time is writing. Okay. So I would have depending on the lesson, anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes, 5 being more kindergarten, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 10 to 15, you know, as kids get into a little more complicated things. Direct instruction, a new concept. This is what we're going to do, or this is, you know, the group lesson, basically. And then the majority of the time would be writing and giving feedback, because feedback is really important. I'm not sitting at my desk while they're writing. I'm walking around giving really explicit feedback about what they need to fix. And that's the teaching moment right there. Those are the teachable moments.
So in the writing workshop model, we'd call those conferences. I know I've also read like butterfly conferences would just be like quick checking in, like not necessarily pulling up a chair and spending 5 minutes, especially in kindergarten. Can you give us some examples of what that feedback might look like?
Lesson might be, let's say, first grade. They're learning to take words and make them into a sentence, put punctuation in. And I would give the words. This is in a workbook, right?
Okay.
So my dad likes to cook. He makes pancakes. So how are you going to make that into two sentences? And we probably have done some examples together. So, you know, we're figuring out what letters would be capital, periods. And then this would be the part of the lesson that I would expect everyone needs to complete this correctly. Okay. So during that time, I'm walking around and I'm saying, oh, I think you missed a capital. Can you figure out where that would be? I wouldn't say it right away. I wouldn't tell them where it is. I would say, I'll come back in a minute and see if you found where that should be. And then by the end of that time, they've all done it correctly. Like that lesson doesn't end with some kids not having gotten it. That's really important. Then they would go on to do, I would have a challenge, because some of the kids are going to finish that super fast. And some of the kids are going to take a long time with it. It's going to be harder. So I would have a challenge, a prompt or free writing or something else that they go on to do. So there's no I'm done. Yeah, everybody's writing the whole time.
So you're having an expectation as to what they're going to write, at least at the first part of the lesson. Does this carry through the primary grades, or is this more of a beginner thing?
No, that carries through. There's always a skills lesson.
Okay.
And the skills lessons build on each other. So the lesson that we did one day, the next day is just going to be a little different, a little harder. It's not going to be a brand new thing. And then the day after that is going to be a little more, so that the kids who have never written before they came to school, there's no opportunity for anybody to get lost.
Okay, so would you call this dictation? You're telling them exactly what to write?
No, it's more of practicing the skill that we've just learned. So it could be handwriting. It could be creating, like in second grade, it could be creating a sentence with a when and a where.
Gotcha.
And a conjunction. And maybe there are boxes to where they fill in a when and a where and add a conjunction and add an end of a sentence. But it's not dictation.
Yes, then the teachers, as the students are doing their spelling, I'm assuming the teachers are holding kids accountable for the spelling font patterns they've taught them. How does that look?
Well, the kids with my program, they tend to generate a lot of writing in one writing lesson, because there's the skills part, and then they can free write or do a prompt, or so it's impossible to fix all the spelling. I'm mainly focused on them getting the skill piece. However, and the spelling in the skill piece needs to be correct. However, if I'm walking around and I see somebody misspelling the word said or where or a word that they should know for their grade level, I will definitely have them correct that and say, that's that's a first grade word. You know, that's one of the words, or play, for example. You know, some kids really won't write unless they, you know, like they stop if they don't know how to spell a word.
So how do you handle that?
I always say, guess and go. Underline it. Underline the word that you know is misspelled, and I will come back to it when I'm coming around to your part of the room, and I will write it out for you, and you can change it. But yeah. For learning how to write, it's really important that kids get the fluency. So they knew in my room, it's not okay just to sit and wait. You know, yeah. You need to keep going.
So, right, being stuck on having to spell it conventionally is a stumbling block for some kids. If they're committed to that, then they just can't move forward. And there's also research that says that students benefit from using the sound spelling they know to use an invented spelling or estimated spelling, whatever people want to call it. But I also agree that if there's a word that they should know how to spell, that you could stop and teach that to them. And also, I think, I know with one of my kids when he was young, so he's 15 now, but when he was little and I was just doing writing with him at home, he would cry if he didn't know how to spell a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the same thing, exactly what you said. I said, well, you can circle it in pencil really lightly and I will come back to it later. And he was the kind of kid that he would remember it after I told him. Like it was useful actually for me to tell him. Teachers have to decide what's useful, right? Like, what is this child going to remember from this? Or am I just telling them a string of letters to write?
There has to be
some understanding there.
Yeah. Now the other time that spelling would come in is if the writing was going to be a final piece. Some of the pieces of writing that they would do that would start out as free writing, you know, sometimes we would have a project that we would do where they'd take one of those pieces and I would do some editing mostly for them. And I would fix the spelling, and you know, when they do their final piece, that spelling needs to be correct. So that's the other time that the spelling would be corrected.
That's an interesting thought, because I just gave an in-person spelling workshop recently, and we talked about that. I had someone come up after me and ask, can I put them things in the hall if the spelling is not conventional? And I've always struggled with that a little bit, because with the really young kids, sometimes asking them to rewrite their piece can be really, really hard. So I think I've done both. Sometimes I've typed it and then they've, with the corrections, and they've illustrated it and then it goes in the hall. Or I told her something you could do is you can put their spelling, their best work in the hall and put like a, almost a disclaimer, like this is how spelling works with young kids and this is what we're doing. You have any thoughts about that?
I tend to have kids do the right spelling if it's going to be a final product. Now, I would feel differently if there's an ongoing thing in the hall, like every week. Sometimes, some years I've had clips in the room where we're just constantly putting up new things, you know?
Mm-hmm. And maybe depends to the length of the writing, right? Like if they're writing two sentences about a picture, maybe the expectation there can be, we're going to fix all these words and copy them correctly.
Yeah,
but if they've actually written a whole story, oh my goodness, they've worked so hard to write the story and then they have to copy it again.
Yeah.
Like that can be a little.
Yeah, I know they hate that.
Yeah.
But so it as really long as makes them proud at the end if they do that.
Yes.
They're so proud. Like they have put so much work into it. Yeah. And I will say that I think grade level matters a lot in that too.
Yes, for sure.
Some context to it.
Yes. Well, let's talk about a quantity of writing. So when I was doing writing workshop, I followed Lucy Calkins, all her recommendations. And of course, we know that she's really off base with reading and a lot of the writing too. There wasn't really a lot of explicit instruction in some of her lessons. And there was a big focus on just getting them to write, just write, just write, just write, just write, versus let me teach you how to write. And it was a lot of expectation that there would be a lot on the paper. And I remember when I started, I don't think I followed Lucy Calkins at this point, but my first year of teaching third, fourth, and fifth grade, I had a third grader who loved to write. He loved to write. And I did writing workshop and he'd just do pages and pages.
Mm-hmm.
I could not for the life of me figure out anything of what he wrote. It was the handwriting was pretty bad. But also the ideas were so confusing. Like there was no connection. So even though he was technically doing what he was supposed to be doing, he was producing a lot of writing. Looking back, I can say, well, what exactly did that accomplish?
Right.
What was he getting better at? But there has to be a line there. So, you know, what's your perspective on how to work students up to more writing, and how do you decide when your expectations should change?
you know, there's a part of me that really agrees with the fluency piece that, you know, kids do need to write a lot. But I think they also need that skills lesson, those skills lessons where they're not allowed to do that. Like, mm-hmm. your job in this lesson, and the lesson has nothing to do with what they're writing about. It's more of an exercise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they get exercise. It's kind of like, you know, if you're doing a sport, drills. Do like a warm-up. You do drills. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or in math, you do drills. You learn your math facts, you know. So with a kid like that, there would be certain times when you say, okay, you need to, you know, your job is to write three sentences that, you know, assuming they're up to that level, right, the sentence yeah. level, that have to do with a time that you got wet or went swimming or something like that. And, you know, I expect periods and all the things that they're not doing, right? Neat handwriting. It needs to be neat. Mm-hmm. It needs to be. But the problem is that some kids have kind of, they've never had to stop and do that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so by that time, there's spacing, there's handwriting, there's mm-hmm. you know, there's mm-hmm. so much. It's a lot easier just to have them acquire the skills along the way. And spacing is a skill that needs to be taught, that makes it easier to read kids' writing. So that's another thing in the writing pyramid that often is overlooked in early writing. Well, you just assume spacing is easy.
Yeah, I like your analogy there of sports, where kids need to practice writing a complete sentence or maybe more than one sentence on a topic, and it's closely monitored and feedback is right there before mm-hmm. we necessarily set them off to do it. Or maybe if there's time, they can do it, but that may not be the focus. Our focus might be on helping them perfect those skills in the smaller activity. And then as time goes on, we transfer those expectations to the longer writing. Would that be true?
Yeah, and the nice thing is that when you've taught something, then when you're going around and giving feedback, you can say, remember when, you know,
exactly.
remember yesterday we practiced with this? And they can mm-hmm. go, oh, right. And you're not going around trying to explain something that doesn't make sense to them or they haven't practiced.
And this makes agreed. And this makes me think more about, and I'm not going to promise to be an expert on Lucy Calkins' units of study, but just the ones that I've looked at, or not units of study, but writing workshop program. Of some of the lessons I've seen and used, it was a lot of focus more on content than on foundational skills. So it was like, mm-hmm. everyone talks about the small moment. Like, how many small moments do we have to write about? But it wasn't a lot of, like you said, going back and saying, remember when we talked about how to form a sentence? You know, there wasn't much of that I saw. Maybe things have changed, but not when I saw it. So it's that assume aside again, assuming that they can write a small mm-hmm. moment without all these foundational skills. So speaking of foundational skills, what is your, you know, I do hear this question a lot. How do I teach kindergarten to write a sentence? How do I even begin? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I don't introduce sentence writing until they can write 4 to 6 lines of writing on their own.
Hmm.
Because I think it's important to introduce concepts when children are ready to use them. Otherwise, a sentence is just a vague concept. So, and they aren't ready to use punctuation until they can generate a certain amount of writing. So when most of the class can generate like 4 to 6 lines of writing, which would equal several sentences, that's when I would say, hey, everyone, you are writing so much. Now we're going to learn about where periods go.
Okay.
If they can't apply it to what they're doing, there's not much motivation.
That's interesting. I haven't heard of it. I haven't heard of it that way. Like, start waiting until, it'd be interesting to hear what other people think about that. Wait until they can produce a lot of writing, because as you say, then it applies.
Yes.
It applies to what they're doing.
Yes.
It's an interesting way to think about it.
And this also has to do with cognitive overload. Punctuation takes a huge amount of mental space to figure mm-hmm. out. And if kids are still not to the point where they can figure out a lot of like sound spelling or mm-hmm. writing, you know, how to just keep going with words on the page. Now you're adding another layer of, okay, now make sure you get all the, you know, the periods where they go, and they're still like, okay, you know, trying to figure out what they're going to say, and the words and the spacing and the handwriting and the, so that's another reason why I wait, because it's adding a huge layer of mental, like, burden, thinking burden. Teaching how to write a sentence, or what a sentence is, I start with picture cards, a who, mm-hmm. and a mm-hmm. doing what. I don't start with their own writing. I mm-hmm. start with them writing a sentence based on pictures.
Yes. Okay.
And they're silly. You know, it has to be fun, right? All mm-hmm. these basic mm-hmm. skill things have to be fun. So the cards are funny. You know, like a, you might pick an octopus, you know, driving a bus or something, and then your sentence is the octopus is driving the bus. Then just writing a sentence and then learning to add another sentence. And a big mistake that kids make is when there's a pronoun like coming up, they don't start a new sentence. So,
yes.
The octopus is driving the bus. She drives the bus to school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of adults do that too, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is part of the code to crack. I found certain things that if you can crack that, it solves like half the problems right there. Mm-hmm. So learning what a pronoun is and then learning to look. Oh, that starts in, did you start a new sentence? And then the rule is if there's a conjunction there, oh, it keeps going. So if they know what a pronoun is and a conjunction is, right there, they've cracked a big code of punctuation.
So your writing program integrates handwriting and sentence structure and syntax, grammar, mm-hmm. all those things come
yep.
together.
When they're ready for it.
Yeah. So, you know, during the writing time that the students have, you talked about prompts, you talked about writing what they want to write. Do you have a preference for that? Do they always get to choose if they do a prompt or write on their own? And do you have strong feelings about the use of prompts? So there's some, I mean, in the past, I was always very anti-prompt, probably because uh-huh. when I was in school, there was no instruction with a prompt. It was just, uh-huh. the prompt was there and there you were just supposed to write. There was no instruction. So maybe you can talk to me about that.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're both really important. Because some students will get stuck on one topic and they will write about that every day if you let them, unless they're directed otherwise. But if kids have a prompt every time they write, or it's always a teacher-led activity with a final product, and you know it's always within certain bounds, then writing becomes something they're doing for someone else. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They don't own it. Mm-hmm. So I think when we allow kids to write something just because they feel like writing about it that day, there are some really cool things that happen. One of them is we get to know them better. Mm-hmm. You know, we find out what's going on in their lives and what they're interested in. And the kids, other kids in the class get to know them better, especially if you have a sharing time, which I think is extremely important. Mm-hmm. I always had a sharing time as part of my writing lesson because that's what writing is for. It's for sharing with people. So that's really cool. We get to know them better. And the other thing is that I discover hidden talents when I let kids write mm-hmm. about what they want. I had a mm-hmm. second grader who watched the History Channel. And he would write about these historical battles or historical, you know, castles or things like that and write about these facts. And it was amazing. And the other kids in the class got to learn from his example. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. They get ideas from each other.
Yes, true, true.
You know, somebody writes a story about a butterfly, you know, as soon as you know it, all, you know, the other girls are all writing about butterflies. I'm being a little bit gender specific there, but that tends to be how it is. Or you find out who has a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. Some kids are just hilarious. And you just wouldn't have known if you hadn't given them that chance to write about what they want and introduce them to different genres.
Yeah, that is great. That is something I remember absolutely, is that you really got to know your kids as writers. And as a mom now, a couple of my kids really enjoy writing. One of them is my third son, so he's 12. And just this morning, he was printing the Daily Pickle, which is the newsletter he writes about our family, which with six kids, there's always something going on. A lot of his stories are completely made up. He's usually the hero, but they're very funny. We could go on and on, but as I told you, I have to run. So we'll have to wind it up. But I would like you to spend a couple minutes talking about your writing program. And I'll also be sure to link to anything you want me to link to in the show notes so people can learn more about it, especially your writing pyramid article and other things that you've summarized very nicely on your website. So talk to us a little bit about your program, why you wrote it, and who it's for.
Yeah. Well, I took 20 years to write it, 7 years for each grade level. So it's been a lot of trial and error that went into it. And I'm very proud of that, because I think there's no program that you're going to buy that has spent that many years
tested and updated.
And it's also been tested by a number of other teachers around the country. And I tested it on other teachers in my school and district as I was doing it, got feedback. It's just very complete. There's no doubt. The teachers that have tried it have told me that it's so comforting, because they can just turn the page the next day and it's like, here's what I'm going to do. I don't have to plan over the weekend and figure out what comes next. Teachers have told me it's so nice because the kids know the routine.
Yeah.
They can practically run it themselves. They know exactly what's expected. And that's the other thing I found, is that it's really important. I think the workbooks are the same. The lessons are different, but it's the same format. They relax into it. They relax into it because they know you're not going to be throwing something brand new at them all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that. A lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I will. But when I put this out, I'll put a little bit after this conversation, a little more summary of what's included and the grades and everything, and then I'll make sure to link in the show notes to your website and your program so people can learn more. But thank you so much for taking time to talk to me about teaching writing, especially in kindergarten. I know that's kind of a hard thing for teachers to wrap their heads around. So hopefully we got into some practical weeds here so some people could see what this looks like in a real classroom.
Great. Well, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
You can find the show notes for this episode at themeasuredmom.com/episode167. I do encourage you to check out Sally's website and particularly her program, Growing Writers. And just a note, if you're looking at it and the price seems too high for you, note that if you are a classroom teacher and your district will not pay for it, she does offer a discount. So scroll down and you'll see her email address and where you can contact her for help deciding if the program is right for you. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.
That's all for this episode of Triple R Teaching. For more educational resources, visit Anna at her home base, themeasuredmom.com. And join our teaching community. We look forward to helping you reflect, refine, and recharge on the next episode of Triple R Teaching.